It was a lot of work, and it was on a fairly short timeline, right? Because this proposal was somewhat new, but it was a lot of fun. And that might sound strange, but it's because it's going to have a real impact on Idahoans. And so it's fun for the university, for me, to see the university functioning as a community resource.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Vandal Theory, a podcast about science and research at the University of Idaho. I'm your host for the day, Kyle Fonensteel, Media Relations Manager here at U of I. I'm joined by my co-host and longtime podcast host, Lee Cooper.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lee Cooper, science writer and editor here at U of I.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, yes, I'm excited.
Me too. Today, we're going to talk about energy efficiency, what regulations matter, and why. So, Lee, I have a question for you. How do you reduce energy use in your life?
My environmental guilt just kicked in hard. Goodness, I know most of the, like, household ones that I should be doing, and yes, I do try and, you know, turn out the lights when I walk out of the room and everything. Unfortunately, though, some of the bigger ones I don't have that much control over since I rent. You know, I can't buy the nice energy-efficient refrigerator or anything like that. Fortunately, my place does have, you know, really good windows and doors, so not too leaky when it comes to air conditioning and heating. I do only air condition my bedroom, so I feel a little bit better about that. But yeah, some of the big ones are pre-built into my life, I feel.
I also rent, so a lot of those decisions are made for me. But at my apartment, we do try to make use of natural cooling and heating by opening windows at certain points of the day and using blinds to control the amount of sunlight and heat in our house. But behind the scenes, there's a lot to make our energy use more efficient before the individual decisions are left to us. Damon Woods, director of the Integrated Design Lab at University of Idaho, is here to talk about how he and other researchers help state officials better understand how individual regulations, in the hundreds on the books, are protecting Idahoans and their pocketbooks from potential energy waste in buildings. Hello, Damon. Thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
First, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this line of research?
My name is Damon Woods. I'm a research assistant professor at the University of Idaho, and I'm director of the Integrated Design Lab, which is actually located in Boise. The Integrated Design Lab is a research branch of the College of Art and Architecture, and it blends engineering and architecture. So my background is actually in engineering, but I got fascinated by buildings and how buildings use energy. And that's what we research at the Integrated Design Lab. So we've got a few graduate students there, and myself there, and a couple of research scientists, because buildings use more energy than any other sector in the US. So if we're thinking about energy matters or climate change, and we're thinking about energy, buildings and architecture have a huge impact. We use more energy in our buildings than all the energy we use for planes, trains, and automobiles in the US.
To start, could you unpack what energy codes are?
We have energy codes in the country, just the same way that we have electrical codes or structural codes. And the idea is that there is a form of consumer protection, right? You want to be confident that when you step into a building, it's structurally sound. And so we have, you know, a structural code that engineers have to follow in order to make sure that, okay, this beam is going to bear so much load and so much weight, and it's going to be safe for occupation. In the same way, we have energy efficiency codes so that when you come into a building, you're not, you know, freezing cold or paying a huge amount of money to keep it comfortable or to keep it lit. Imagine if you had just open windows all the time, it would be tough to keep it warm during the winter. So we don't want that. And while, you know, you can close a window, sometimes during construction, if the building isn't constructed tightly enough, it can be very drafty, and you have that same effect within the building. So that's what energy codes are there to prevent. They're there to prevent high energy costs to the consumers and to the occupants of the building. The Integrated Design Lab at the University of Idaho has been a part of the energy code negotiations at least for the last 10 years. We help organize and participate in the Idaho Energy Code Collaborative. which brings together stakeholders of different industries, the Building Contractors Association, you know, the city officials that have to go out and inspect the buildings, industry groups, you know, people like American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and HVAC Engineers, ASHRAE. We try to bring them all to the table and then figure out what regulations make sense for Idaho. And that has been occasionally a hot topic, right? There can be competing interests between businesses that want, you know, very streamlined construction, and then balancing that with consumer protections to make sure that the building is designed well and is well insulated, is lit well without using a whole lot of extra energy. And that's where the university can help provide information, education, and act as kind of a third party, a neutral third party, trying to help everyone get to a compromise that works for business, that works for consumers, that keeps Idahoans protected and safe.
How is energy delivered to buildings and used?
Yeah, so buildings use more energy than any other sector in the U.S., right? They're huge energy consumers. And so the utilities have a very big interest in making sure that buildings are operating efficiently. Because anytime somebody new moves to Idaho or a new business opens up, there needs to be extra kilowatt hours. There needs to be extra room on the energy grid to accommodate those people. And so somebody like Avista or Idaho Power, they could go out and they could build a new power plant somewhere, even a new solar farm or a wind farm or a gas power plant. But that costs a lot of money. The cheapest way to accommodate more people on the grid sharing these resources is to make sure that people are using them well, right? People in buildings, they don't want kilowatt hours. They want light. They want heat, they want cooling during the summertime. And so how can we most effectively deliver those things using the fewest kilowatt hours or therms of gas? Right? That's what we're all about, is enabling efficiency. And that's what these energy codes are there to try to push forward, is to make sure that these buildings are operating well without consuming unnecessary energy.
So it's not just that building owners have a stake in this. It's also utility companies. But I know you also talk about how these regulations have huge benefits to individual consumers like you and me. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, so it's something that every citizen of Idaho has a stake in, right? Because we all share on the energy grid. And so if the price goes up for one of us, it goes up for everyone. So the more efficient things are, the better. There's also an element of comfort that goes along with this as well. So part of the residential energy code is making sure that the ducts that deliver hot and cold air in the home are sealed, and that the home itself is well sealed so it's not drafty, and that the walls are well insulated so that if you're sitting next to one, it's not going to be very, very cold. We all know that sense of sitting next to it, the cold or a drafty window, and we don't want that. And so, like I said, they're there in place for consumer protection. And if you buy a new house and you expect to be comfortable in it, and all of a sudden you're spending a lot of extra money that you weren't expecting on heat that's just being exhausted to the attic or is being lost somewhere in transit because the duct is leaky or the house envelope itself is not constructed well, that's what energy codes are there to prevent, to make sure that the building is built well and is going to be comfortable for the people inside.
What did you learn in your work with the governor's office about the state of energy codes in Idaho?
Energy codes, they're set by the legislature. The Idaho legislature. They all have to vote on it. They have to agree. The code collaborative, they try to bring people together and find a compromise. They bring that to the Division of Building Safety. That board then votes on the recommendations, which usually follows the code board. And then they send their recommendation to the legislature. And the Idaho legislature gets to vote on it one way or another. Are they going to adopt the latest energy code? These usually come out in 3-year cycles. Or are they going to leave things as they are? Or are they going to make Idaho-specific amendments? So there are a couple of amendments within Idaho where we look at, say, the 2018 Energy Conservation Code, which is what we're on in this state, that was adopted by the legislature last year. And you say, actually, for Idaho, it doesn't make sense to have that much insulation in, say, a log home or something like that. So let's tweak it a little bit. How things changed this last year is that the governor's office issued a rule on zero-based regulation, zero-based rulemaking. So before, legislators had to justify any new regulation, as did the Division of Building Safety. They would have to say, okay, then the latest energy code, energy efficiency code 2021 is out. Let's review it and we'll justify any changes to the old code that we had in 2018 or 2015. That was the old way of doing things. Now, in an effort to cut red tape, which is admirable, but challenging, we're starting from zero-based rulemaking, which means instead of justifying any new change, you have to justify all existing regulations. So the idea is to start from zero and to build back up. The energy code is a bit dense. It's a bit wonky. There's a lot of different sections to it. And so it's been a challenge for the board to go through each line item, which can be very technical, on things like economizer operations or particular dampers within ducts. Like it gets into the very fine details of how a building is built. And they have to justify every single one of those line items because of this zero-based rulemaking. And so they had proposed cutting quite a bit of it. Where our office came in is to examine what would the effect be if all these regulations are removed. What if we removed the energy code in Idaho or large sections of it? Part of the justification was to make sure that the rules that are in there are life safety focused. Beyond life safety, consumer protection is considered part of the zero-based rulemaking, and to make sure that we're not adding an undue burden to any one industry, and yet still meeting the intention of the code, which is to promote not only life and safety, but also the health and welfare of Idaho citizens. So we looked at the overall energy code, and it's like, what impact does each line item have on life, safety, health, and welfare, which includes utility bills, right? An efficient home is one where you don't have high energy bills. But what if you had a leaky home? What if we removed this duct testing requirement and suddenly our homes, you know, maybe not initially, but over time get leakier and leakier? What is that going to mean for people's bottom line? In Idaho, just this last month in January, 1 in 5 Idahoans could not afford a utility bill. That's 273,000 people. That's a lot. So even small changes can have a very large impact. And so we looked at the air tightness of a home. And at the Integrated Design Lab, what we do is a lot of energy modeling. So we can look at two homes identical to each other. And in one, we say, okay, this is built to a certain tightness. We call it an air change per hour, 5 air changes per hour, fairly leaky. And we look at one that abides with the 2018 energy efficiency code of 3 air changes per hour, a little tighter. What is the difference in the annual utility bills between those two houses? You know, we give the same weather file to it, you know, it goes through each hour of the year and it like does Idaho's average weather. And then we give it, you know, Idaho power rates or Avista rates for heating and cooling. And we say, okay, at the end of the year, what would be the difference to these two consumers? And it was about $75. Not huge for one individual family, but that's $75 a year, every year, for the whole life of that house for the next 50 years. So that really adds up. And you think, okay, that's just one house. But imagine a subdivision of hundreds of thousands across Idaho. It has a really large impact on Idaho's bottom line. And this is basically blowing free money into the wind, right? If you build the house correctly at the start, then you're not going to have all these leaks that are really hard to fix, to retrofit the home and to fix later. So we looked at that for both one house, as well as a medium-sized office building. And we looked at the parts that were going to be removed under this zero-based rulemaking proposal that was brought to the board. They were looking at removing, say, the mechanical efficiency code. They were looking at removing sections of areas where, you know, you need occupancy switches for lights, a certain efficiency of light bulbs and things like that. Commissioning on the building. And we said, okay, well, what if you didn't have those things in there and we had two office buildings? Compare one to the other. One abides by the 2018 code. The other, we remove some of those efficiencies. And to look at, you know, the overall cost, and it was significant. It was thousands of dollars per year. That removing things like programmable controls and economizers would cost businesses an extra $2,000 per year in utilities. Removing things like ventilation controls or daylight controls, or assuming slightly less efficient lighting costs the building owner an extra $2,000 per year in utilities. One was $2,285. The other was another $2,000. You know, it depends on which sections of the code you want to remove or add, but you know, this is $2,000 to $4,000 per year in extra bills that aren't going to employees, right? They're just going to venting hot or cold air into the atmosphere, or less efficient light bulbs and less efficient heating and cooling equipment. So that's information that we compiled and we took to the board this last November. They voted on it to keep the energy code as it is. They are still in the negotiated rulemaking process, and we'll do our best to provide energy modeling that's specific to Idaho, specific to Idaho homes and businesses, to look at the effect of individual line items so that they can take their recommendation to the legislature and say, you know what, we believe that these items do protect the life, safety, health, and welfare of Idaho occupants for these reasons. And that's our goal, to provide information and education and hopefully provide the board the information that they need to make a good decision one way or the other on specific line items. You know, perhaps there's one area where it's a lot of regulation, it's a lot of code, and there's not a big impact on Idaho homeowners. So maybe they look at minimizing that section. And others where it's like, well, with an economizer, you get free cooling during the summertime. It would make a lot of sense to keep that in, because that's going to protect the welfare and the bottom line of business owners.
This sounds pretty complicated, looking at all these individual rules to see how they make a difference over a big area or time span. How do you draw a big picture?
Yes, there's hundreds of pages of code, and it gets a bit wonky, and it has arms in different areas, right? There's a section on mechanical code. There's a section on, you know, the envelope, the insulation in the house. Builders are different than HVAC folks, which are different from electricians. And so there's a lighting section and controls. So it's hard because it goes into so many different areas, but all of them impact the utility bill at the end of the month. One thing that our lab did that I'm very proud of is we had a student in our office, Gregory Reyes. He's a graduate architecture student in Boise. And he went through the whole code book and put together a graphic representation of each page. So we could see, okay, what parts of the pages are just kind of innocuous language, definitions, a glossary or something like that. Which parts of the code are really meaningful? We'll code that in like a dark green, say things like having a certain level of insulation in the walls. And then which sections are being removed, say the mechanical efficiencies. So in a just an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, you could see at a glance which sections were kind of just gray, not really important, which sections were really important that are staying, and which sections have an impact but are being removed in red. And so just visually you could see, oh, hey, it's, well, initially the proposal wasn't to remove that many pages. It's the most effective pages, you know, so it's actually about 80% of the effective code was about to be removed. And so having that just visual representation helped me, and I hope it helped the board as well, kind of get a clear sense of what the proposal was and what impact it might have specific to Idaho homes and businesses. So we did one for the commercial code and one for the mechanical code. So you could just see at a glance specifically what this proposal was about and what impact it might have.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It was a lot of work, and it was on a fairly short timeline, right? Because this proposal was somewhat new, but it was a lot of fun. And that might sound strange, but it's because it's going to have a real impact on Idahoans. And so it's fun for the university, for me, to see the university functioning as a community resource. So yeah, the energy modeling had me up late some nights to see how this would work in time for the code meeting so they could have their information at their fingertips. But it was a resource that I was happy to provide, and one that I hope helped them make an informed decision.
After looking at this, do you have a sense of how Idaho's energy codes compare to energy codes in other states?
Yes. So Idaho is politically very conservative. It's just the way we are. Very fiercely independent, and we want to limit regulation. That's one reason a lot of people move to Idaho. And so part of the zero-based rulemaking was to look around at other states, similar Western states, conservative values, and say, okay, how does Idaho compare? Are we super regulated? Are we under-regulated? Like, how do we stack up? And so if you look at a state like California, California has their own energy code, as does Washington State. Those have very tough requirements to meet for a lot of builders and a lot of HVAC professionals, right? They have a very high bar to clear. They want their homes and businesses to be very, very efficient. And so they're using codes to kind of push professionals towards that. Within Idaho, we're on the 2018 International Energy Conservation Code, which puts us about in the middle of the country. A state like Wyoming or Montana, that whole state might not necessarily have one energy code for the full state, but they allow individual cities to adopt their own energy code. And so Cheyenne, Wyoming, they, I believe, are on the 2021, so a stricter energy code than we are here in Idaho. Even though statewide, there's no official code. And it's similar in, say, Alaska. We looked at Utah as well. A lot of those states allow, they're home rule states. They allow individual cities to adopt whatever they want. And what you find is that in the metropolitan areas, the higher population cities, those cities are generally on the 2018 or 2021 energy code. Like 80 to 90% of their population live within a jurisdiction that abides by, you know, a higher energy code than what we have in Idaho. Idaho is unique in that in 2020, I believe it was 2020, it might have been 2021, House Bill 660 made it so that the state as a whole has just one energy code. So cities like Boise and even counties like Blaine County had started to push their own energy codes that were stricter than the statewide level. And the state legislature said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to adopt this 2018 code, but we're just going to cap it there. And so no city can go beyond that. That's just, you know, the way that they voted. And so if these sections of code were removed through the zero-based rulemaking process, a city like, you know, Meridian or even Moscow could not say, well, we wish they hadn't removed that. We'll adopt our own. You can no longer do that under House Bill 660 by Idaho law. And so as the state goes, so go all the cities, which makes it very different than, say, a Wyoming or a Montana.
The Integrated Design Lab analyzes energy efficiency in buildings by looking at how the presence of specific regulations affect cost over time. Could you walk us through an example of a building you've analyzed?
Energy codes, like I said, they can be a bit wonky. It can be a bit boring, but they have a real impact. They're important. And so one kind of funny story is several years ago, our lab, the Integrated Design Lab, partnered with Avista Utilities to examine a specific building on the U of I campus. This was the College of Business building, fairly new. And what we wanted to test out is, could we build, you know, we love energy modeling, right? Because it's a way of like testing different things. So we thought, can we build what we call a digital twin of this building? So the real building's up in Moscow, but down in Boise, we build a virtual version of it. We run the same weather patterns through it, and we can see how our building model is going to respond. So we could test out, you know, how is it going to operate in the wintertime, even if we're testing it in the summer? Are the controls keeping up or not? So it's a way of testing the controls. One part of the energy code is a requirement for economizers. Economizers sound strange. What it does is, it's basically a control strategy. So if it is a cool morning during the summertime, rather than running your air conditioner to just recycle, say, 70 degree air inside the building, and you try to cool that down to 55, instead of doing that and using all that extra energy, you just open up a damper wider. You just open up the building a bit more to bring in that cool 50 degree air from outside, and you mix it to get to 55 degrees. That's a great way of just using the free resource of cool air in summer mornings. So that's called an economizer. And what we found when we built our digital twin of the building is that the real building wasn't using its economizer the way our digital twin thought it should. And we're like, that's funny. And so we started messing with the actual building, say, hey, you know, it's a cool morning. Why don't you bring in some fresh air? And all of a sudden we did that and things started heating up immediately. And like, what is going on? What we realized is that the sensor that's supposed to be sensing the outdoor air in Moscow, attached to that building, attached to that control system, was sending wildly wrong signals in. And so the sensor thought that it was going to be really cold outside, when in reality, it was like, I don't know, a 90 degree day. And so it was bringing in this super hot air into the building and trying to cool that. So wasting a whole bunch of extra energy, which is why they just shut the whole thing down. They say, we're not going to do that. We'll just recycle air and cool it down. But you're missing out on all those nice cool mornings. It's like, why is this happening? Did some digging, looked around, and our facilities folks, they were so awesome to work with. It was great. It was a really fun project. But what we found, and this was no fault of the facilities managers, this was just something that got missed, was that the sensor for the outdoor air was located right next to a whole bunch of rose bushes that were getting irrigated every afternoon. And so this cold water, the sprinklers were hitting it, and the sensor was thinking, oh, it's a nice chilly morning today, you know, when in reality it was much warmer outside. But that sensor was giving very wrong signals. So just by physically moving that sensor out of the line of water being sprayed, now we get to use that free cool air, which saves the university, saves that particular building, about $4,000 a year. Right? That's pretty much somebody's semester of tuition. All just by walking outside and just moving a little sensor 5 feet up. So those are the things that we look for. Those are the things that are within the energy efficiency code, is to do that commissioning, is to make sure economizers are there so you can use things like free cooling and save people's tuition from being ruined by sprinklers next to rose bushes.
That's wonderful. I feel like it's a good reminder that even though so much work can be done in a lab or a controlled environment, sometimes we just need to get boots on the ground and go look.
Yep, need to be out there. And that's why I love our lab, is we get to do both. We get to do the digital side and then go out into the field with instruments and see, okay, what does this actually look like on the ground? And why the Code Collaborative is great too, because you can bring in academics, you can bring in, you know, code officials, and then bring in the actual builders and try to find, you know, compromise that works for everyone.
Thanks so much, Damon. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, Kyle. It's been a joy.
Well, Lee, what did you think?
Oh, that was really interesting. You know, sometimes universities, get trapped in sort of that ivory tower box of, you know, students go in and then they come out and that's it. That's what universities do. But it's always so wonderful to see the examples where that's not actually true. Universities have impacts across the states that they're in. This is such a wonderful example of Damon using his position and his knowledge to really impact a really important subject matter for Idaho, let alone, personally, my own pocketbook. Thank you for that. So it's just really nice to see the impact that our university can have on real-world issues.
Yeah, I also really, really liked how Damon shows how researchers aren't just talking to students and other academics. Often they're rolling up their sleeves and helping decision makers and communities tackle complicated problems using their expertise from research that's grounded in real-world experiences. Well, thanks for listening, Lee, and thank you all for listening to The Vandal Theory. You can visit us on our website at uidaho.edu/vandaltheory to learn more about our research. Email us at vandaltheory@uidaho.edu. We are on all the podcast platforms. Please rate, review, and subscribe. I'm Kyle Fonensteel.
I'm Lee Cooper.
Thanks for listening.